The following broadcast of Sioux Valley Voice was recorded earlier. You will not be able to call in during the next hour. You can listen to past episodes of Sioux Valley Voice online anytime at ktna.org. You're listening to KTNA 88.9 FM Talkeetna, streaming from ktna.org. This is Sioux Valley Voice. I'm Philip Manning. Today on the program, my guest is Mat-Su Borough Assembly Member Randall Kowalke. We'll be discussing issues facing the Assembly and other borough topics affecting the Upper Valley. We'll also take your calls. The number to dial if you want to join the conversation is 733-1200, or you can email DJ at ktna.org. Randall Kowalke, thank you for joining me.
Well, I am delighted to be here.
So hopefully you had an uneventful drive up on this chilly February morning.
The only moose I saw were not on the road, and that's a good thing.
Right. Well, you know, recently after that last big snowfall, there were newsworthy numbers of moose on the road. So glad that they've kind of retreated back into the woods. So we've got a number of topics to cover today, but I want to start with, we had a Mat-Su Borough Assembly meeting last night, and just to get us started, if you kind of want to give us some of the highlights of what went on last night at the Assembly.
Yeah, most of the highlights were actually during the manager's report. We had an extensive report from the Mat-Su Health Foundation and their essentially report card, which was really interesting in the fact that it had broken up the areas. We have an area, the northern Susitna Valley region and demographics, and it was a really comprehensive report. We only had a couple of items that we actually had any testimony on, which were rather benign, and that was a pretty short course. Mm-hmm. One of the important things we did, and unfortunately it wasn't able to have Mr. Bill Gamble there, but his term of service with the Department of Emergency Services ended, and we had mm-hmm. a proclamation for him and his replacements on board. That's Otto Feather.
Okay. And I know one of the other things that was on the agenda last night was the legislative priorities. And so for listeners who might not know what exactly that is, I mean, it's somewhat intuitive, I guess, but what is the legislative priority process for the borough and what's on the list this year?
Well, we take information in from community councils, from the borough itself, particularly in the roads. And there's a large number of categories that are broken up within that. There hasn't been a great deal of movement, and unfortunately I can't quote them to you off the top of my head. Mm. There's road projects, there's infrastructure projects, recreation projects. As it relates to my northern portion of my district, I think the attempt for a new Willow Library sits in recreation mm-hmm. under number 4. That's, from the top of my head, pretty well where they land. And it's each year the items are reviewed to see if they belong where they are. And, of course, in this environment of very little money coming from anywhere.
Sure.
I'm not expecting a lot of movement.
Right. Well, I mean, yesterday on Talk of Alaska, Lori Townsend had Senator Pete Kelly and Senate President Pete Kelly and Speaker of the House Bryce Edgman on, and they were both talking about the fact that the capital budget in recent years and expected to be going forward this year is going to be very minimal, which would cover a lot of the type of projects that you're talking about.
Yes, exactly, and that's our expectation as well. And in fact, our concern is more about our school bond payment than trying mm-hmm. to draw capital project money.
Right. Well, because last year when they walked back the bond reimbursement on that ended up putting many municipalities, but the borough, in particular for this region, in a bit of a budgetary quandary.
It was $5.9 million, and of course there was also an impact of a couple million, if I remember the number correctly, to the school district, which inadvertently affects us. But we were still massaging about another $900,000 to cover that payment. I expect to be in Juneau on the 22nd and 23rd, I believe, of this month, making it real clear that we can't afford to have that happen again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So last night's agenda, like as I think you've alluded to, wasn't as jam-packed as they can be at times. But you were also here on Monday night for the Talkeetna Community Council meeting. And one of the topics that got brought up that I think was at least somewhat unexpected and a bit of a surprise for a lot of people was the discussion of some of the railroad-owned property on the west side of the tracks here, on the downtown side of the tracks, and the potential for expansion of or addition to parking on what is now railroad property on this side of the tracks. And Eric Phillips and Emerson Kruger from borough staff came up and talked about that. What's your understanding of where this is at right now? Because in the past, the railroad has not been very amenable to discussing use of their land on the downtown side.
I don't know what alignment of the stars brought this about. I know that Robert Sheldon and his associations there have been just tremendously helpful, but the clouds have rather parted. And the railroad is interested in doing this. I don't know that there's any hidden motivation, although in the plan they would have some reserved spots right adjacent to the tract in the map we have in front of us here. But it's been an ongoing thing. The railroad's aware of it. The year I spent as a candidate running in a good deal of my time in Talkeetna, that's been a problem. Continues to be a problem, and Robert had an opening. I got Emerson and Eric involved, and we were sketching this out. I do understand also that Robert has vetted this with some of the adjacent property owners, and as I mentioned to you earlier, there's been three or four renditions of this, and we may not be done yet, but as I also mentioned the other night at the meeting, this window is open, and I would like to get community support for this so we can execute it. The railroad's ready to go with us. They're enthused about this, and plan or part B, I guess, is the area that would be, not sure quite how to describe it on the map, but there's some other wooded railroad land that would be, I believe, north and west, I guess, of the parking area.
Of the current Chase lot there.
Right, that they're also interested in either a management agreement or possibly some kind of a land swap or something else to get that land management in the hands of the local community for potential additional trails or whatever the community might have interest in.
Well, as I recall, that this whole parcel here, and we have the benefit of looking at a map. Unfortunately, over the radio, it's hard to get that out. But you sent me an electronic copy that we can put out on the web later on. But this whole parcel here that, as you said, goes up northwest from the current Chase lot along the tracks to the river and then down and around, that's all apparently one parcel of land. And from the indication that we got that I got Monday night was that all of that is potentially on the table for, as you mentioned, either a straight-up land swap or at least some level of borough management of that land, with the exception of the 100-foot setback from the tracks themselves. So, you know, and we've mentioned the Chase parking lot a couple of times, and I know that we have many, many avid listeners up in Chase. And so just to kind of describe what this looks like is you've got the current lot there where it's a combination of things. There's parking for the Chase residents and kind of the beginning of the Chase trail heading up out of there. Excuse me. But there's also, you know, that gets used a lot in the summertime as just temporary parking. And from what it says here, there would be an additional 30 car spaces added just north of that. And then further, a little bit further up the trail from that is where, from what Emerson Kruger was saying, they envision the new Chase parking to be. And that includes, according to this drawing here, some longer parking spaces, which they say specifically could accommodate trucks with, say, a snow machine or a four-wheeler trailer on the back of it. The vision that they expressed on Monday was that those would then be able to be used by Chase residents in order to park some of their larger vehicles there.
That's absolutely correct. I think the estimate is 25 of those such parking stalls. There would be some kind of a permit situation administered so that those did remain in the inventory of Chase community parking options. This is not the final drawing. We expect a little massaging to happen here, but this is, I think, the fifth maybe rendition of this to make sense for the community, and I'm really excited about it. One of the calls to action that I've been encouraging, in addition to the railroad's willingness to act on this now, is we'd like to have this parking opportunity usable this year, if any way possible.
That seems a little ambitious, but we'll see if we can get it. If that comes into being. So, as far as this goes, like I said, we'll be able to put up this concept drawing in order to help solicit some feedback from both Talkeetna and Chase residents. Any sort of feedback be directed on this?
Emerson Kruger at the borough, and or Eric Phillips, who's the director.
Okay. So, and I have their contact information. Yeah. We can share that when we put this up online. So look for that later on today if you're interested in viewing these plans for potential additional downtown parking, which, as you mentioned, Randall, downtown parking has been a topic of relatively constant discussion here in Talkeetna for the last few years. So some potential movement on that. If you have any questions about that or any other topic and want to call in, the number to call is 733-1200, or you can send us an email at dj@ktna.org and ask any sort of question of Assemblymember Randall Kowalke, who I didn't explicitly mention, but your district does, of course, include our entire listening area. and actually, you sent me a map the other day that was pretty interesting of the relative sizes of the districts, and District 7, which is the district in which we all lie, is enormous in comparison to the others.
Yeah, we have the borough is in the neighborhood of 25,300 or so square miles. My district is 18,500 of those. Until that drawing was made that I sent you, we sort of had the Alaska-Hawaii version of our map, where my district wasn't shown. Our district wasn't shown in its entirety. So I asked that this be made up for a number of reasons. One is some fish testimony that I'm going to be doing coming up. But, it's pretty incredible.
So, yeah, you're talking about, Meadow Lakes north to the borough boundary with the Denali borough, right?
Exactly. Mm. And then we go west to Rainy Pass, and then east essentially cutting like through the Hatcher Pass area. It's fairly narrow that direction.
Okay. So that not only includes a number of communities here. I mean, a lot of that area is obviously pretty sparsely populated, but there's a lot of wildlife habitat and a lot of watersheds in there.
I have 25% of the borough schools in 1/7 of its voters. I have the complete drainage of the Susitna River, the Yentna, the Deshka, Alexander, and so on. And which is one of the reasons I'm excited about the prospect of testifying before the State Fish Board, is that we've made some huge strides with culvert projects that we've done for fish passage. And I wanted those folks to know that within our power, we're doing everything that we can here to help our fish. And I don't want to see the commercial interest undo the conservation corridor. Hmm. And there's a move afoot to try to do that in Cook Inlet.
Okay. So something else that you brought up at the Talkeetna Community Council meeting on Monday on previous assembly action was the Christensen Lake gravel pit. And we did some reporting on that here locally, but if you could kind of explain that the borough used to have, even though the Christensen Lake spud doesn't allow extraction and commercial activity within its area, this gravel pit was established before that, and the borough had grandfather rights to it. But now those have been relinquished. Is that correct?
Yes. I had on a couple occasions recently, one of which was the airport project, suggestion that Christensen pit could be used for gravel at the airport project, notwithstanding my awareness of the spud, and I didn't care for that popping up, and I didn't see any way to keep it from continuing to happen unless I wrote an ordinance, and I did, and it was passed, and so that's done. We've completed that.
Okay. And I know that at least some of the folks who were out in the Christensen Lake area were there at the meeting Monday night, and they definitely seemed appreciative. So something that's been going on in the news recently that wasn't brought up on Monday was Port McKenzie. And it's one of those it's an interesting case because many times I've heard people at various levels of the borough say that, you know, Port McKenzie is the potential economic future of the Mat-Su borough. But now we have yet another instance where there's significant problems and significant money having to be poured into Port McKenzie in order to keep it operating as it is right now without the kind of income that the borough and some in the state as well are hoping will come in there. So what's the status with Port McKenzie and now these new repairs that are going to have to be done, and where does that look like it's headed?
Well, I am glad you gave me a few softball questions before we landed on this. Yeah, it's literally a disaster in my mind. We have, 220, 240, I don't know the exact number of millions tied up in rail and port. Mm-hmm. We had a structural failure, and which we felt would be covered by insurance. Mm-hmm. We received word that they're going to contest that, so we're looking at our options at that point. And in the meantime, the repair has failed. Mm-hmm. So the cost on that, again, I believe is going to be essentially the same as the initial repair, about $1.5 million. I think the port has nearly half of that aside from some other monies, but I'm sure they'll be coming back to the assembly for, 800 or so thousand. And I don't know, like I didn't know with the ferry that we inherited, that there's anything else we can do. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can't, I don't think, give up on a $220 million sunk cost investment and not fix the port. I think we are going to take some serious looks. We've had essentially one engineering firm advising us on this project. I think we're going to step out of that box and get some more information because we can't have this happening again, clearly. When I was in D.C. Not long ago, Senator Dan and I and the manager were discussing the military significance and implications of that port and how important he believed it was, as well as ourselves, in that we all know that the port of Anchorage sits on 2 meters of blue clay. Mm. We also know when the earth moves, it liquefies. Mm. And so the senator was extremely interested in seeing the Port McKenzie be a viable port and working with us to help finish, complete the rail spur. So that's where we find ourselves, and I think it's somewhat in the same mode as we did with the ferry, in that we had to fix it to sell it. And I think we have to fix this to operate it. But I think there's going to be a great deal more oversight and judicious examination of all those elements going forward.
And you mentioned the port of Anchorage. And, of course, not all that many years ago, there was not necessarily similar, though in some cases, structure-wise, there were similar problems at the port of Anchorage. What sort of lessons is the borough taking from the issues that Anchorage suffered in order to move forward at this point and prevent any sort of continued issues? I know you said, potentially looking at different engineering firms, but I mean, how does the approach change from the borough, knowing that there are these now inherited pre-existing issues? What do you do now?
Well, and that's take a look at the whole cards and take a look at the overall operation. The Port of Anchorage, which I'm intimately familiar with, their subsurface is disastrous, in my opinion. There is 2 meters of blue clay under them. Our subsurface is a great deal different. We have where they don't have is we have a scouring tidal movement that allows us to have a deep water port without dredging. Okay, that's the good news. The bad news is that our curtain walls have more and more of their metal exposed as this scouring takes place. So these are sort of learning on the job. And of course, I think one of the issues that we have in our government is that most any of us are going to be around to deal with this outside of Mayor Halter, who was 6 years an assemblyman and then is now run for mayor, is that you have a new team coming on field. So by the time they catch up and figure it out and start down these roads to solving some of these things, they're gone. And I think that's an inherent problem, and that's probably a subject for another discussion. But at this point, we're trying to get up to speed. PND was one of the firms that just settled with the Port of Anchorage. They were the primary designers on our project. We've reached out to a company that I'm not intimately familiar with called AECOM. It's AECOM. That's port experts, and we're trying to get some analysis. PND has a proprietary system, which we used, so I think it's unlikely that they would come to us and tell us that the system doesn't work.
Right.
But
an outside expert might.
Might, and I think just, and we're all familiar with double-hull tankers, and I think one of the possibilities, and certainly I'm not an engineer and I'm not proposing this, but as somebody who's paying attention, might be another wall behind the current wall, kind of a double-walled situation to give us some additional protection on that. The borough has not decided where to go with what's going to be apparently a denied insurance claim. We're researching that and having some other folks take a look at it. So, again, not going to run away from this. The folks listening here have my commitment that I'm going to be 100% engaged in this. But I've been your assemblyman for a little over a year, and along with the ferry, which I was fortunate to be part of a team that actually got rid of it, we're now inheriting these port things. But I continue to believe that 40 years from now, the international airport is going to be out near Port McKenzie. There's going to be a float plane lake out there. The Kubota Bridge will be built. And that port is going to be significantly important to the state.
Okay. So if you want to join in on our conversation, if you have any questions for Assemblymember Kowalki, you can give us a call, 733-1200, or send us an email, dj@ktna.org. So, we were talking about Port McKenzie, and you mentioned the ferry, and what those have in common is that, and I think you brought this up recently at the Assembly, was that nobody currently sitting on the Assembly, including Mayor Halter, was around when these projects were greenlit initially. But, you know, the problems have kind of flowed through to the people who were sitting in those chairs now. And so I have two things related to that. One is what sort of precautions and steps can the people who are in there now take in order to prevent these sort of legacy problem thing projects from happening in the future? I mean, you know, right now you're looking at things like the Port McKenzie or the rail spur, and that's been ongoing for a long time, but it's not completed yet. What sort of precautions can and is the borough taking to make sure that we don't end up with another problem of the magnitude of the ferry or of the port itself?
Unfortunately, Philip, the answer is nothing. We can't make decisions, budgetary or otherwise, for assemblies that haven't yet been seated. Mm. So how do you wiggle your way through this knothole? We've got term limits. Term limits are the greatest thing in the world, according to a lot of people. I always thought that the ballot box was the place to have term limits. And if Charlie's not doing a good job, take him out. But we've got the situation where, you know, I'm going to be here for another 2 years. Beyond that, I have no idea. So if I'm involved in an effort that today there's 95% consensus that this should be working, and I get support for it, and we do something, and 2 years later, I'm gone. Why I even did this may be of somewhat of confusion to the new people. Mm-hmm. If there's a problem, they don't know the origins. And in these particular cases with the ferry and the port, they go way back. As you said, Vern Halter, who's was 6-year assemblyman and now mayor, was not even around then. So I don't know that there's a good answer to that.
Okay.
It's just, you know, the voters have made the decision on the term limits, and that's what we have.
Okay, and that's the other thing I wanted to touch on was terms and term limits. You proposed and through ordinance to extend assembly and mayoral terms from 3 years to 4 years, and it, if passed, it would not have affected the people currently in office, but for the next round, it would have affected them. That ended up being defeated unanimously in the assembly, including by yourself. So where did that get turned around, and is there potential for something like that appearing on the ballot in the future?
Well, came about as part of based on the map that I sent you. And when I looked at that more closely, when you take, Matt Beck or Dr. Doty's districts, you can get up to speed there. You don't have 15 gravel pits and the drainage of the Susitna and so on. So in looking at that, I thought I could use some more time, or the person that ended up with this district could use some more time. Theoretically, in 2 years, I don't run again, and a new assemblyman is seated out here. And I thought going forward that extra year, by the time we go through the exercise of getting up to speed on all things from Rainy Pass to Cantwell to Meadow Lakes, that we could have that extra value. Mm. And it wouldn't have affected anyone, and it was part of this continuity. I think I probably should have put that map up on the screen at the assembly meetings, because if you look at that, it's clear why my job is a little more difficult than some others, and the learning curve is the same thing. I finally had an opportunity to get out to Pentillo Lake here recently and stop at the lodge and meet the folks out there. Other than Vern Halter mushing through, I don't know if they'd ever seen their elected officials. But that was the reason for it. It was clear that it was going to burn down. At the end of the meeting, during mayoral comments, Vern suggested that that might even be an item for an advisory vote in October, just to get a feel from the public. He also mentioned possibly whether we should take a look at putting an advisory vote out on the whether or not we should become a first-class borough. Mm. So there wasn't any more discussion following that, but I think that's maybe in the offing.
Right. Well, and that seemed to be the primary objection that was being raised both from the audience and from some of your fellow assembly members, was that it was something that would be better left to the people to decide one way or another. And so that's interesting. I didn't hear the mayor's comment on that at the end of that meeting, but...
Well, when I talked to the borough attorney about it, he said the state law authorized 3 or 4.
Okay.
And so I thought, well, if we did that by ordinance, it's not a huge change. It doesn't affect me seating. If I ran again and won, I guess it would mm-hmm. affect me. I didn't believe it was some kind of a government power grab. I have repeated a number of times that in the election I ran in, 13% of mm-hmm. our voters voted. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that we were any less representative if the assembly in its entirety would have voted to have passed this. Were the folks not being represented? I didn't have a huge get wrapped around the axle discussion with myself over that.
Right. Well, and borough voter turnout has been traditionally fairly low. And what's interesting that you mentioned that specifically with this district is that our district's elections coincide with the mayoral elections, which you would normally expect those to be higher. Now, this past year, turnout did increase. Right, but we had the marijuana on the ballot, which we'll get into potentially in the second half hour. But we are at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with the second half of Sioux Valley Voice. My guest today is Mattsu Borough Assemblymember Randall Kowalki. If you want to call in during the second half of the show, the number is 733-1200, or you can email us dj@ktna.org, and we'll be right back. Back with the second half hour of Sioux Valley Voice. I'm your host, Philip Manning. My guest today is Mattsu Borough Assembly Member for District 7, Randall Kowalki. We've been discussing some issues facing the assembly, as well as other issues in the borough that affect the Northern Valley. And if you want to join the conversation, the number is 733-1200, or you can go online, or you can email us, dj@ktna.org. Unless, of course, you're listening to the rebroadcast at 7, in which case you will not be able to call in. So we wrapped up talking about some of the first half hour, talking about some of the legacy problems and some of the potential measures to avoid that in the future. I want to get into some things that are new. And so one of those is, as we mentioned in the first half hour, last October, the borough voted against a ban on commercial marijuana within the unincorporated area of the borough, which includes the entirety of the Upper Valley, with the exception of Houston, really, which had independently legalized commercial marijuana. So now we're in this process. The borough there was a loophole discovered, a problem rather with borough code that was discovered that has since been solved. And here locally, recently, a lot of the discussion has centered around one business, the High Expedition, which intends to open at the end of Main Street, down on the river end of Main Street. And whether or not that business was going to be subject to the conditional use permit process, how that process was going to look, that's been the topic of a fair bit of discussion here over the last 6 or 8 weeks or so. And so in the most recent action in closing the loophole, you introduced an amendment that would basically make it so that anyone who was already within the licensure process would be subject to the rules prefix, which would essentially grandfather in the High Expedition under the borough rules to not require a conditional use permit. Can you kind of walk us through your thought process? I know you and I have talked about it on record before, but can you kind of walk us through your thought process and how that all came to be?
I would be happy to attempt to add some clarity.
I know it's a complex issue, but
What happened in the beginning was spuds should have been added to the ordinance, and they were not. So I believe there was a gal named Dietrich, Crystal Dietrich, mm-hmm. out in one of the spuds, who was going to have a grow operation.
Also in the Cattell-Keaton area.
Yeah, and she was grandfathered in because her license had already been far along in the process. And then there was Mr. McEnany's attempt to have his business. So that was going out there. I was much chagrined and pretty disappointed. The borough attorney's office is supposed to be reviewing these things, other departments, and anyway, it got missed. So we needed to do a fix. And that was to have come up at the next meeting.
Which would have been in December.
No, I think we're in January now.
I think the original hearing date was the second meeting in December, okay. And then it got pushed.
Yeah, because it didn't get posted properly. Yeah, whatever meeting it was. So anyway, I understood from the borough that Mr. McEnany had his CUP application and his check at the borough, but couldn't turn it in. Because the borough didn't advertise the meeting properly, therefore the assembly couldn't take action, and so he was sent home because we had no vehicle to accept that. Mm. Subsequent then to that, a group of folks here in the area decided that that business should not be allowed. And to make sure that it was not being allowed, they were demanding a moratorium, which would have essentially put back into effect the moratorium that I had put on businesses during the period when we were waiting for the election.
Right.
I was not inclined to do that again. The public had spoke again in a rather convincing manner. So they wanted the moratorium because they were going to go to the community council and make changes to the spud that would have then essentially grandfathered this business out of business. so that they could have the moratorium in place, get the prohibition in the downtown area against marijuana businesses, have the moratorium come off, and deny Mr. McEnany his right to do that business. Folks were showing up at the community council meeting, and they were showing up at the borough assembly, and ultimately, I didn't like the fairness issue, whether you supported marijuana or not. I have been in the community, as you know, a great deal, and Mr. McEnany had announced about February a year ago his intentions, what was going on, what was happening, has since taken a seat on our water and sewer board, is also the secretary at the Chamber of Commerce, or treasurer, excuse me. And so this has been going on, and no action was taken by these people who wanted this change to change the SPUD in an earlier manner. And we have some huge issues going on at the borough. We've mentioned those earlier, the port, we're still doing the insurance claim on the ferry. We've got budgets. We've got $5.9 million vetoed in the bond repayment from the state. And I didn't feel like we could have Channel 2 and 15 or 20 people coming to every assembly meeting demanding that we do the SPUD, we change the SPUD, we do something else. And I made the motion or the amendment to grandfather Mr. McEnany's business into the system and move on. And that's the rationale behind why I did what I did.
Okay. And so for clarity's sake, then even though the borough's conditional use permit would not be required, of course, there is still a state licensure process that has to be completed, which is in progress right now.
Yes. Yeah. And I expect that as it relates to Mr. McEnany, again, as I understand it from a discussion with him when I was talking to him about having his CUP permit set up that I think February he may be approved, maybe even has been approved.
Not in the last meeting. I listened in on the last AMCO meeting, and that business was not included on the agenda for February. Yes. So
it would be March then.
Right, and I believe the reasoning there that was expressed by the director of AMCO was that part of the reason they're it's taking a little bit of extra time is at the beginning of the year, you also have a lot of biennial liquor license renewals. And so that's occupying a lot of the time of their process and administrative folks at this point.
In fact, I think at the Talkeetna Community Council meeting, we have three up. Yeah.
So, and then there was one last month. So.
Okay.
and no new licenses for those listening out there. These are all renewals for existing businesses. But, okay, well, I just wanted to, I know that was a long process that we reported on quite a bit here at KTNA, and I wanted to make sure that there was an opportunity for you to express your reasoning. So I want to move on to talk about, you mentioned the Sewer and Water Board, and I want to move on to that, but I want to give out the number one more time, 733-1200, if you want to join the conversation, or you can send us an email, dj@ktna.org. So to talk a little bit about the sewer and water system, of course, the problems with it in recent years have been reported on extensively by us here at KTNA, Public Works Director Terry Dolan has been rather forthcoming with explaining kind of what's going on and what the borough intends to do to solve some of those problems. But something that's even predated that is the fact that the system has been operating in the red for years and years, even before these actual physical problems with the sewer lagoon came to light. So, and there have been multiple discussions about handling increases in rates and other ways to deal with it. There have been questions about using the bed tax, which have gone nowhere due to what the borough attorney's legal interpretation. So what, and you mentioned on Monday night at the council meeting, another possibility, and I want to let you explain that to the listeners.
Okay, what All of what you said was 100% in my view correct. The utility has an issue with scale, and you've got 200 accounts trying to run a water and sewer district, and it's not working, hasn't worked. A number of runs have been made. I know as a candidate I was inundated. How come we're paying 68% of the bed tax? How come we can't use some of that? I've gone to the folks in Juneau. I've gone to the borough attorney. I've gone around in circles. So what I talked to the borough attorney about was an ordinance that would allow a sales tax within the water and sewer district only, and that sales tax would be used to pay for maintenance, help offset costs. We have 200,000 to 300,000, depending on whose numbers you use, of tourists coming in, and they would be paying that tax with their purchases within the water and sewer district. So the borough attorney's comments was to me were questioning the constitutionality of doing this. Mm-hmm. And initially there was some reticence. He's done some more research and figures it's probably a 50-50 proposition.
Okay.
Part of that equation was that I found out that that we could do this solely by ordinance, and we then may have the same constitutional challenges. We've opted not to do that. If this goes forward, it will be on the ballot. The reasoning being, according to the borough attorney, that the state Supreme Court is real interested in the will of the people.
Okay.
So that could be a factor. So what I've done is gotten letters of support from the Water and Sewer Board itself and the Chamber of Commerce yesterday morning supporting this concept.
Okay.
And I underline that because the percentage, whether it's seasonal or not seasonal, all those things will be sorted out prior to the time this is prepared for the ballot in August. So if we're going to not get any support from the community for this, as I told folks at the meeting the other night, if this is the worst idea they've ever heard, I'll step away from it. Mm. But I don't have any other rabbits out of the hat for solving this legacy problem.
Okay. And you mentioned that it was brought up at the Monday meeting, and I should note that the TCCI board, the Talkeetna Council board, didn't take any action on it. They're going to continue to mull that over. So, of course, the next inclination would be to ask for specifics, but you just said that that's still kind of in the works. So we'll allow some time on that. But I will say we got a question in from a caller here, and it steps back to our last topic, which was commercial marijuana. And at the same time that the commercial marijuana ban was shot down in the unincorporated areas, a sales tax, borough-wide sales tax on marijuana was also approved. And the caller's question was, since Palmer and Wasilla opted out of marijuana sales, the caller believes there should be a way that those communities not receive the benefits from those marijuana taxes. Is that something that's at all feasible? Or you'd probably have to ask the borough attorney if that would be legal. But
you're exactly right. And I appreciate the question, and I get it. Because there was some discussion whether those folks should even have been able to vote during that last election. But I think with the way that money would enter the system, it would be general fund money, and I don't think it would be able to be excluded that we couldn't spend any money of that money in Palmer and so on. But I don't actually know the legal answer to that question.
Okay. I think this was at least partially a statement of opinion as well as a question. So, and it does kind of dovetail on what you were talking about earlier with the fact that, you know, the vast majority of bed tax, for instance, does come from, from this end of the borough, and the assessment that was done by the borough a year and a half ago now, I want to say, showed that the Northern Valley, at least according to that assessment, pays in more than it gets back out in terms of borough services. And so that's definitely a sentiment that persists here. So if anybody else wants to call in, we've got just over 10 minutes left in the show. You can give us a call, 733-1200. I'm also monitoring the DJ at ktna.org email address. So to get us back, we were just talking about sales tax, potential sales tax for the sewer and water district, and you said that the goal then is to have that appear on the ballot. So then only people who reside within the district would be able to vote on that. Is that correct?
As I understand it, that would be the case. And if I can fill in a little more around that, and I was talking to folks yesterday at the borough headquarters, but I have our Public Works Director Terry Dolan giving me some estimates on what he believes we would need. We've got, I guess, 30-year-old ductile pipe that we've just gotten money to actually do some thorough inspecting.
Right. I know they just got a camera system and...
So we need to be able to figure out whether we need to put $50 a year or $50,000 a year into a ongoing maintenance fund, because we haven't done any of that in all those years. In order to currently operate the system not in the red, we need rates that are double or triple of where we're currently at. That's not feasible, in my opinion. So what I've got Terry working on is what's it cost. I've got the finance department working on some estimates for some percentages that'll work for us. My hope is at some point to survey the business community on orders of magnitude, because I'm not wanting their personal private information, but do you do 50,000 to 100,000? Do you do 25 to 50? Some level of magnitude, so that we then can develop a percentage and what that percentage would need to be if we do this seasonally or if we did it on an annual basis. All those things are in the works, but we are trying to answer those questions now.
And the idea then being that, especially if it were seasonal, would then be that since we do have however many 100,000 people come in here in the summertime, that it becomes sort of almost a user fee at that point for the system.
And it fits into the causer pays. Mm. So, yeah, I which was why I liked that when I started mulling this around and am proposing it.
Okay. So one last thing I want to hit on, and you've mentioned it's come up a couple of times, and it's kind of – it used to be the major borough news item, and that's the MV Susitna. And a couple of issues with that. You know, of course, there's the ongoing discussion with insurance. But one thing that I'm interested in, and I understand if there's a limit on what can be discussed publicly, but one ongoing issue with that has been grants from the Federal Transit Administration or Federal Transit Authority. I can never remember what the A is on that. But $12 million, as I recall, was the total grant amount. Some of that was spent on constructing a terminal building, and my understanding is that the borough has always intended to pay that back because it was used. However, the rest of the money, the borough's been in negotiations with the federal government on how much of that needs to be paid back. They've requested it, which I guess started this whole process. What can you tell us about where those negotiations are and if and when a resolution can be expected?
A great question, Philip. And I say that with a smile. I was in Washington, D.C., engaged in the periphery of this discussion. The folks back at that point in time, the only question they were interested in addressing is, am I going to have my job under the new administration?
I see.
I mean, it was chaos.
Sure.
We didn't know, and we have attorneys back there working on this. And again, I can't get into the details, but they were trying to work out whether the dynamic would be better with the people that are leaving or working with the people that were new. We've got 100% support from our senators and from from Don on this thing. Clearly, it was no one's intention to defraud the government, and of course, the role that Anchorage played in this debacle. So, it's a working item. I expect to be back in D.C. in April. It's going to be high on the agenda, and hopefully, at that time, we'll have some clarity. But part of the discussion was that it had to pass a judicial smell test, that they couldn't have, say, a Senator Murkowski come in and bully that agency into letting us off the hook for 50 cents, And so justice has to be looking at this. So so that is a complication. I think the agency itself understands our problem. They're trying to figure out how to maneuver through this. And with the election and the change of administration, the people heading those areas are not likely to be there. So we start again.
Right, which is often the case whenever you have a change at the top. It does tend to trickle down in a lot of ways. So to continue on with the theme of negotiations with governmental agencies, the other set of negotiations also goes back to the sewer and water system, and that's the Department of Environmental Conservation. And with the violations from the sewer lagoon from a couple of years ago, I know that there are discussions ongoing there and that there is somewhat of a gag order on the specific. But again, if you could give us any sort of update on where those are at and what direction they're headed.
They're ongoing, and I am under a fairly serious gag order, and I've already been reprimanded by the borough attorney
for talking to me.
Probably. I think it was you, Philip, actually. I guess what I can say is I'm hopeful. And I believe we're seriously headed in the right direction. I do know that it is public information that our compliance tests have been improving and right. have improved, and that's out there. And, of course, the nature of this beast is that if you get out of compliance based on the holding characteristics of the system, it can take the 290 to 320
right. 10 months or so
to work through that. So I'm real happy with where we're headed.
Okay. Well, we've just got a few minutes left in the show here, so I wanted to give you an opportunity. Folks wanted to get in touch with you, wanted to share any questions, concerns, whatever with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Email is actually the best, and that's posted on the website. My phone number is 315-0805. But I have a lot of incoming calls. It gets into voicemail. If I have something I can read as in an email, it helps me. But that's also a smartphone, and it takes text. So that works, too. But, yeah, I want to be available. But realizing with 14,000 constituents, there might be some people in line ahead of you.
And then the final thing I wanted to give you an opportunity to touch on was, you know, basically the topics we've covered today are things that I've thought of that I thought were relevant. But with the last couple minutes, if you want to, you know, if there's anything coming down the pipe, of course, budget discussions are coming soon, that sort of thing. Anything you wanted to mention or to bring up that you want your constituents to be thinking about?
Well, I am a serious supporter of schools in the school district, but I have no idea how this is going to work out. We're under tremendous pressure. If the governor withholds the next $5.9 million bond payment, I'm not sure how we work through that. The school district is asking us for an additional 3%. I don't know that that's going to be possible. And certainly I'm not proposing to negotiate this, but I just wonder what kind of a hopefully small percentage cut across the school district from the very top to the very bottom would make everything work. And I don't know what the answer to that question is, but I'm concerned that we're going to have a tough time. Dr. Bishop now, Dina Parama, who had been our superintendent is in Anchorage, and there's a headline that they're going to lay off 99 instructors. Mm-hmm. And I really don't want us to go anywhere near there, but I don't know yet without getting into the process what that's going to look like.
Okay. And so, again, you said that's largely dependent on what would have otherwise been expected bond repayment from the state not coming through.
Correct.
Okay. So, And when does the budget process begin in earnest?
Well, it's beginning internally in earnest now.
Right.
we're going to do the same thing as we did last year, and I don't remember the months, but we had three or four exterior budget hearings. One was at the Massey. We had over 100 people at Willow.
Right. The Willow meeting was very well attended.
Well, they always serve good food there, I think. But so we'll be going through that same process, March, April, roll on here. And of course, if anyone has comments or suggestions or ideas, please feel free to email them, and I'll pass those along to the folks working on it.
Okay. Great. Well, that is just about all the time we have for today on Sioux Valley Voice. I'd like to thank my guest, Randall Kowalki, Matsu Borough Assembly Member for District 7. If you missed part of today's show or would like to listen again, Sioux Valley Voice will rebroadcast tonight at 7, and you can find this and past episodes of Sioux Valley Voice online anytime at ktna.org. For KTNA, I'm Philip Manning. Thanks for listening.